You're listening to the Valley College Connection podcast, where John Kawai and Scott Wiegand, two Valley professors, engage in a conversation about success with educators and students. Each week, they'll sit down with a different guest to find out ways each of us have had to plan, persevere, and overcome to be where we are now. The show will also highlight resources and services that are working to make a difference at Los Angeles Valley College. John and Scott believe that all of us, and the college itself, are a work in progress. And in this podcast, they'll explore on a more personal level how the community can work together to support each other as we move forward with our goals.
We are joined today by Cassidy Miller, STEM Counselor and Advising Coordinator for the STEM program at Los Angeles Valley College. Thank you for joining us today, Cassidy.
Thanks for having me.
We wanted to start off by finding out a little bit more about you, the pathway that led you here to Valley College, how you came to work here, and then we'll bring it up to the current moment and find out more information about the program that you're working in.
Okay, great. So thinking about the pathway that led me here, let's see. It can go back pretty far. I think, you know, something that's a little bit interesting about my past is that I was always driven from a really young age to go to college. I didn't quite know what for. I grew up in Ohio, so I was in the Midwest, and thinking back, because I think it's really important to kind of take into account what the family systems are like too, and mm-hmm. two of my grandparents actually only have eighth grade educations. They only had eighth grade education. So it was interesting growing up in an environment where no one in my family was college educated. And then, you know, I'm kind of the second generation of high school graduates on one side of my family. But I always knew that I was interested in education. Even from a young age, I wanted to start reading really early, going to school, learning things. I just love learning. And I didn't really feel challenged in school, so that was an issue for me. Where I grew up, I actually moved every 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I was always going to different schools. And kind of a funny story about that, I never learned the United States because I was moving from school to school, and so one school had already taught it by the time that we got there. Sure. I never learned. So right. Little things like that are interesting. But
What was the impetus for moving all the time?
My dad worked on the railroad, and we were just kind of moving around kind of to be closer to some of his job sites. So mm-hmm. not a military parent, but my dad was a railroad guy. So
every time you got a promotion, you just you changed towns? And...
Yeah, I don't know if it was necessarily a promotion. But we were always moving for his jobs. So starting off school, I was actually really bored as a student in school. I didn't go to the best schools in the areas that I lived in were rural, kind of like farm towns. And I actually, we had this program where a college student would come to our school and some of the students would leave the classroom and get to work on special projects. And so that really exposed me to, this is what a college student is like. This is the kind of challenge that you could have from higher education. And as I was growing up, my mom cleaned houses. And so I saw, you know, my dad had a high school education, worked on the railroad. My mom cleaned houses. She didn't have any education after high school. And for me, it was really important to get an education because I knew that that could be a ticket for me, you know, way more opportunities in terms of financial. How would you explain that? Like just financial status. And I knew that getting an education would be really helpful in terms of having opportunities and really getting out of poverty.
Sure.
Was that a message that was reinforced by your mom and dad? Did they support that or were they ambivalent about college or dismissive?
Yeah, you know, I think my mom is so supportive. She always wanted whatever's best for me and she knew that I was a good student. And so she definitely supported me. I mean, I always say, like, no matter what job that I had chosen, she would think I was the best in the world at it. So she's like that. But my dad, he, same thing, you know, he would support whatever I wanted to do. But the financial aspect of it, he had said to me, you know, if you want to pursue an education, maybe you should think about joining, you know, the army or the military or something that you could finance your education. So I knew from a young age, this would have to be something that I would need to save up for and really plan for. So So as a 10-year-old, I actually, it's funny looking back at kind of some of my old assignments from school, I had go to UCLA, move to California, get a bachelor's degree, you know, and so looking back on that, I was super set on it. The reason I wanted to go to UCLA was I liked the colors and the bear.
Oh, yeah.
So that's how I made the decision. And what's really crazy is that I had some friends who were older than me in high school, and they had moved to UC Santa Barbara to go to school in Santa Barbara. And one of them, well, I guess I should backtrack a little. So when I was in high school, I had the opportunity as a junior and a senior to attend Kent State University as a dual credit student. Mm-hmm. It was called post-secondary enrollment option. So I did that. I started college right as soon as I could, and I loved it. I was over high school. I didn't like high school. I didn't want to ask to use the restroom, and I felt like the assignments weren't interesting. So the second that I had the opportunity to go to college, I jumped on it. And so I started college when I was 16, and I started going full-time as a junior and a senior. And because of that, I was able to graduate high school early because I took a lot of extra units. So by the time I had turned 18, I was halfway through technically what should have been my senior year.
And what was your major at this point?
I don't know if they had us select a major. I can't remember. I feel like if anything, I would have selected communication. Going back even fifth grade, a news reporter came to my elementary school, and she told us about kind of how she had an adversarial kind of situation where people told her she couldn't become a news reporter and she wouldn't go on to get an education, and she beat the odds. And as a fifth grader, I was really inspired by that. And I was like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to be a news reporter. I'm going to be just like her. So I studied communication. So if anything, I probably selected communication as my major. So started college. By the time I was 18, I was done with high school, kind of in the middle of what would have been my senior year. Mm-hmm. And I was set on moving to California.
Were you on campus at Kent State too?
Or I commuted.
Okay.
I commuted.
So did you have half the day at your high school and then the other half of the day at the university?
Or? For my junior year, I would spend till like 10 a.m. at the high school. And then for the rest of the day, I'd leave and I'd go be at the college for the rest of the day.
And were you with like a cohort of other high school students, or were you just fully integrated
no,
with the rest of the college?
No, actually, I was by myself, and that was really difficult for me because I didn't know my way around the campus. I didn't know how to get books. Everything was a total mystery to me. I just kind of showed up to campus like, well, I hope I figure this out. Huh. But luckily, I had some really good professors, and I didn't take advantage of any of the resources. I didn't know that resources were available, so I just kind of stumbled around until I figured it out. Senior year, I was doing it full-time. I would just go to Kent State full-time all day, which I love that. But yeah, once I was 18, I was done with high school, and I was legal, you know, to move to a different state. So my friend, back to the UCSB story, I'm kind of going all over the place, but back to the UC Santa Barbara story, I had a friend who, she was a few years older than me in high school, and she was living in Santa Barbara. Her roommate from Sweden got sick and had to move back to Sweden. So she called me and she said, hey, I know you just turned 18 and you want to move here. Do you want to move into my apartment? So I said, sure. So I packed up two suitcases, got a plane ticket, had no job, moved out here, my first apartment, and it was in Isla Vista, which is quite a hectic place to go as an 18-year-old. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely a little culture shock for me. But I'm glad because it was a nice way to kind of ease into like a LA lifestyle.
Sure.
There's a lot of differences. And I was really lucky because my roommates were UC Santa Barbara students. So they were able to teach me how to ride the bus locally, you know, how to do all the things you need to do to kind of survive in a college setting.
And your plan was just to make some money, acclimate, and then at some point apply to UCLA afterwards? Or
yeah, exactly. I didn't know what that was going to look like, though. So I already had some college credits, and I decided to work because I was done with school, and it was January, so I didn't wasn't planning to start school until the fall. Well, I didn't know about the whole residency process and how that would work either.
Right.
And having to pay for school myself, I was just like, well, I've got to figure all this stuff out. So first, I had to get a job. I think I came with like $500 in my bank account. So I had like enough to pay 1 month's rent and some other things. So I started going around to different shops, Giovanni's Pizzeria, Victoria's Secret, Wahoo's Fish Taco, put in applications to all these places, and I got a few jobs. And I was, I don't know how, I had no resume. I just walk into these places, you know, give me a job. And I did. I got a couple jobs. That kept me afloat. And then somebody told me, you can't just go straight to UCLA in the fall. I was like, what do you mean? Mm. So I said, okay, well, I've got to figure out how to get residency here if I'm going to pay for school. So I went to Santa Barbara City College and I talked to a counselor. And the first counselor that I talked to, you know, not really the best fit for me, kind of in terms of helping me figure out what all these things were. It's like, what is IGETSE? What does it mean to have 60 transferable units? Like, I don't know what all this stuff is, what all the rules are. So I ended up joining the honors program at Santa Barbara City College, kind of with the idea of, well, I'm gonna do a year at Santa Barbara. I'm gonna try to get in-state residency by working, and then I'll apply to start in the next fall. And so I met the honors counselor there, and she was fantastic. She was really great, and she helped me figure out all these different things, you know, which classes to take, what I needed to do to transfer. And people had told me, you can't transfer in 1 year. That's not a possibility. And so I was just like, I'm gonna do that. So I met with her. We made a plan. She was super supportive. And so when I'm thinking about counseling students, I still have her in mind of making sure that people understand all the ins and outs of what it is that they're doing here. Why are you here? You know, do you know what you need to do in order to accomplish your goal? Because she really helped me, you know, set that foundation. I had a lot of support. I was really lucky to have her, my roommates, just the people that I met along the way. So I ended up applying to UCLA, still thinking I was going to be a news reporter. And I got into their communication program. Best day of my life. I remember getting that phone call. And you got into UCLA. I was just like, what? This is crazy. This is my dream since I was a 10-year-old. So I loved it. I loved UCLA. It was amazing. I mean, I can't say enough good things about my experience there.
But just, before you got there, let me back up just a second. So,
yeah.
So you said that you were developing sort of your skills. Schedule with your counselor at SBCC. Sort of, it sounds like it must have been an intensive year. So were you taking a bunch of classes to get through that transfer?
Yeah, I forgot about that. So I was taking, at one point, I think I was taking like 19 units between Santa Barbara and Ventura College. Okay. I drove specifically. It's funny that I'm the STEM counselor now because I was doing anything I could to avoid math, and I needed statistics to transfer. So at that time, Ventura College was offering a psych stats class in the evenings. So I would drive all the way to Ventura and take this 3-hour stats class. And I wasn't very good at it. And I didn't know about tutoring services. Mm-hmm. So I would pay this guy that I found a flyer for. I would meet him at a Starbucks and I would just pay him to help me learn statistics. Mm-hmm. So that year was really difficult because I was still adjusting. I didn't know things like how to budget for groceries, or, you know, I wasn't even really good at like how to wash your laundry. I just didn't know kind of the basic things. So it was a lot of growth that year, on top of figuring out school, how to study for all these things. Luckily, I kind of had a taste of that because I was at Kent State, so I kind of knew what the expectations would be, but not on carrying that many units. So I definitely had to figure out how to maximize my schedule and my time between working, going to school, and just also trying to meet new people and develop a home and a community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Sounds like that must have been a crazy year.
So,
in terms of
difficulty, what was the difference between Kent State Community College and UCLA? Like, how did you find those experiences different?
Kent State, Well, Kent State was a university. So I think, I mean, but then again, I think about the classes that I took at Santa Barbara, and especially the honors classes, and they were tough for me as well. I had to put a lot of effort in. I spent a lot of time studying, a lot of time preparing. And it's funny because a lot of the things that I try to teach people now about forming study groups and seeking support, you know, I didn't really do any of that. Mm-hmm. I didn't really think about it. I didn't really know about it. So I just put probably more effort into it than I could have if I was smarter about doing the work. Yeah. What was your question?
So, was the difficulty of each college different?
Yeah, I think that both Kent State and Santa Barbara City College were similar in, you know, what the expectations were. But I remember being at Kent State and just being younger, and I think it was difficult for me because I was younger. I still had to learn a lot of the skills that I needed. You know, paying attention to so many details too. I remember doing papers and the formatting needed to be right and losing points on the formatting and things like that. Just learning rules. You have to kind of learn rules about school in order to do things correctly. And that was a learning process for me. So by the time I got to Santa Barbara, I kind of knew some of what that should look like. And I also definitely reached out to my professors to get help and to ask questions and participate in class and things like that. Whereas when I was at Kent State and I was younger, I really felt younger than a lot of the other students. Mm-hmm. So I was really introverted and I didn't really participate in class as much. My classes were bigger too, so I was a little bit more intimidated by being in lecture halls and things like that. And even reaching out to those students, well, they're older than me, I can't ask them for their notes or their phone number for help. And by the time I got to Santa Barbara, I kind of felt like I was on a little bit more even playing field. The classes were smaller and the students were less intimidating to me at that age. So I think that kind of played a difference in what the environments were like for me.
So you finished up the intense year at Santa Barbara. You get the acceptance letter to UCLA, and then you start that quarter. Do you move over the summer or what?
Yeah.
What is that all?
Yeah.
All
so like? My roommate, my best friend, she's still my best friend. She's a Craigslist roommate that I made in Santa Barbara, and we packed up her SUV, went to Target, got some essentials, and then she actually moved me into my dorm. I lived in a dorm. At UCLA, the transfer student kind of housing. And moved in there, met some new people while I was there, and some roommates too. Definitely, it was different going from kind of knowing somebody that I had at least one person in my apartment that I knew to going to having three new roommates in a brand new place, especially dorms too, because just the setup's different. That was kind of difficult, not knowing anyone at UCLA at all. Whereas at least in Santa Barbara, I had two people that I kind of knew. So that was definitely a transition. But what I did there was everyone told me, you know, try to get involved, try to do different things, meet new people on campus, because it's going to go by really quick. You only have 2 years. So what I did was I decided to rush a sorority. And I was really against that at first. I was like, that's stupid. You know, sorority girls kind of have that idea of what all these people are going to be like based off movies. And when I did it, I said, wow, actually, a lot of these people are really interesting, really intelligent. I feel like I would be friends with them. And that's what I did. I joined a house and I met new friends. And it was great because, you know, a lot of the social activities were already planned out. And those networks of people had already kind of been built. So I kind of just fit right in with the friends that I made there and their friends and all the activities that we did. And so that was actually really nice. And I did not think I was going to do that. So that was kind of a pleasant surprise for me because I really did meet new people that way.
Did you move into the house?
I did. And actually, you know what? Being a financially independent student, it was actually a smarter financial decision for me. And a lot of people are surprised by that because you drive, you know, on Hillgard and you're like, oh, these mansions are so beautiful. You know, they're probably so expensive. And they are, but they include the food, you know, I didn't have to buy furniture because my bunk bed was already in there, you know. And so at the end of the day, living in the house was actually less expensive for me than living in the dorms. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing, too. I feel like one of my hardest accomplishments was getting recognized as an in-state resident. That process was really difficult, and I had to keep track of all of my bank statements, so much paperwork, and it's just I had to prove a lot of different things about being financially independent in order to qualify. And one of the things that I'll never forget when I went to UCLA, and I would always go into, I think it was the registrar's office, and try to get information and help, and I just felt so lost there, and I didn't know how to do this process of getting in-state residency. And one of the things that they had said to me is, well, you know, you could get married, you know, you could, if you get married, then you could get in-state residency. If you come back with a ring on your finger, that could be one thing. Or, you know, if you have a child or all these different things. And I just thought, why, how could that be? You know, it's so difficult to do this on your own. And then the advice that I got to wasn't really that helpful. So I did feel really kind of alone during that process.
I mean, California just does not want out-of-state people uh-huh. to come. I mean, we make money off of out-of-state people.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's why UCLA has an inordinately large number of out-of-state students, and they do that because they can charge them a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, and that's the thing, too, is the price differential is just really, really large. So there was no way that I was going to be able to afford the out-of-state tuition, and I actually thought I might have to drop out of school. Even though I got admitted, I looked at what it was going to cost, and I thought, you know, I might have to delay school maybe a year and try to save this money if I don't get in-state residency. So that is really tough. And I think, you know, a lot of the students, too, that I meet with, they're coming out of state, coming here. It's a process, and it requires a lot of research.
Would it have been a lot easier if you just didn't go to school at all for the first year? And just work for the first year?
I don't think so, because Santa Barbara City College granted me residency, and I think that helped me when I was getting residency at UCLA. Still looking back, I don't really know all the ins and outs of how it happened or why it happened. You know, it just got done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think that it would have made a difference if I hadn't gone to school.
Yeah, because California doesn't want people to come here. I mean, you go to a state like Utah, once I was there a year, you're in.
Yeah.
There was no paperwork. Just, oh, you've been here a year. You have a driver's license for a year. Done.
Interesting.
So yeah, California makes it as hard
part,
as possible.
Yeah, that part was, I feel like maybe getting the call to get into UCLA was one of the top, and then maybe the second one was getting in-state residency, because that was tough.
And the fact that SBC, Santa Barbara City College, could grant it, but then you'd still have to do it separately for UCLA is kind of crazy.
Oh, yeah. And another thing, too, just not being familiar with these systems or anything that goes into it, it was just totally overwhelming to me. I was just like, I have no clue what all this is going to entail. But I just kind of took it step by step. And I think that's one of the things that I love now so much about my job is I see people come in and they're totally confused and they're like, what the heck is all this? Or maybe they're afraid to even say that they don't know what it is. And I'm like, hey, it's totally fine that you don't understand this. Let's walk through it together. I had no idea what I was doing either. I get that. I totally get that. And I was so set also on studying communication, mass communication, becoming a news reporter. Like I said, in fifth grade, that was the goal. And then I did an internship at CNBC. And that was another struggle getting there. At that time, I didn't have a car. You know, I'd take a bus to the subway, to the trolley, to, you know, just everything felt like a struggle for me in school, getting places and just getting through all these kind of processes. Mm-hmm. But I really did enjoy the internship there, but I didn't like the job itself. So loved the people, loved the stuff that I got to do. But I looked at the job and I just thought, uh-oh, this isn't for me.
Right.
And that put me in a not a bad situation. It was just a learning experience for me, which is I'm in my senior year now. I thought since fifth grade, this is what I was going to do. Now what?
Right.
And I didn't take advantage of anything like the Career Center or a lot of events I didn't go to. I kind of had blinders on. Well, that doesn't apply to me. I don't need to go to that. You know, I'm going to be a news reporter. Why do I need to go to these career fairs? So I didn't participate in a lot of things. And when I graduated, I was like, uh-oh, now I need income. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
So I had friends from my sorority that had gotten hired at a company that was like a company where they would connect employees to contractors who needed to expand their business. So, like, for example, if they needed extra cable runners, we would connect them, or extra electricians, we would connect them. So kind of like a staffing company. Mm-hmm. I hated it. I hated it. And I thought to myself, I came home actually crying my first day of work. And I was just like, people are do this with their lives. They spend 40 hours a week, you know, go all day doing something that they don't like. How am I going to get through this? How am I going to live my life like this? It was just, oh man, I was really, really worried. And I didn't know what tools were out there to get through this kind of stuff. So I stuck it out because I thought, you know what? I think this is just what being an adult is like. You just have to be miserable for 40 hours a week. And maybe you just enjoy the time that you have when you come home and you enjoy your weekend, and then you turn off, you know, when you go to work, and you just get through it. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of just hit a breaking point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. There has to be something else. There has to be some other thing that I could be excited about and interested in doing. So I went to another company and I got a promotion. I thought, well, maybe I'll make more money and that'll make it worth it. Nope, didn't work. Made a bunch of money. First time in my life where I had, I was a sales rep and I was an account executive and I was working with all these big companies, Warner Bros. And Disney and, you know, Sony. And I thought, wow, it sounds really cool, right? Like, I get to dress up and wear a suit and take people out to lunch and that will be cool. And I'm in the IT field and working with engineers all day. Same thing, hated it, miserable. Come home every day, totally just ready to go to bed. And I wasn't feeling alive. I was just, this is not what I'm meant to do. There's got to be something else. So I took a 16personalities.com assessment, Myers-Briggs type indicator, mm-hmm. kind of like the short version. And I got my results and I was just like, that's because I'm doing the wrong thing. I'm doing the wrong thing. I need to help people. What can I do? How can I help people? So first I thought, well, maybe I'll become a nutritionist or a registered dietitian. Maybe I'll work with animals. You know, there's got to be a lot of jobs out there you can help animals. So I started researching, probably applied to like 50 jobs, didn't hear anything back. I'm like, wow, I'm pigeonholed. I'm going to have to work in business for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. All right, go work for another company. This time I'm doing advertising for a tech company. Worst job of all three. I'm like, okay. So now I've tried all these different types of businesses. Still don't like it. Not a fit. Something's wrong. Gotta change things up. And there's a lot of fear there, especially coming from an insecure kind of like financial background and then going into a six-figure job and then being like, wow, I'm going to give this up. To do what? Go back to school and, you know, have to super budget again and not be able to buy the things at the grocery store that I want. And I'm going to have to give this up in order to get something that I want. So I said, you know what? This is my whole life. And the amount of time you spend at work every week is really important. I just got to go for it. So I started informationally interviewing people. And this is like the number one thing I love to recommend to people because it's free, doesn't cost you that much time. And you can find people who are actually in the field doing the things that you might be interested in doing and learn from them and see if it's a fit.
How did you look them up?
Well, so after I did the personality assessment, I started looking at jobs that could be a fit for me. And that's where I got those ideas. And I looked at the jobs that weren't a fit for me, which were the jobs that I was doing. And I just went to Yelp and I typed in registered dietitians and I went and I interviewed three of them. And after talking to three different registered dietitians, I was like, nope, none of them sound like they're really, enthused with what they're doing. And one of them did, but it still just didn't seem like a fit for me. So I'm like, I'm not going to go back to school for that.
And how did you frame that when, you know, did you tell them, hey, like I'm at a crossroads, just trying to get a sense of what some other jobs are? Or, you know, I mean, were you super transparent about it?
Or was it more like, I was like, I'm miserable. Are you happy in your job? You know, like, is this how it is? Do all adults secretly hate their jobs and that's just everybody's, like, doing it? I thought that could be a possibility. Everybody's a zombie. Am I the only one that's awake here? Like, kind of feeling like sure. that.
Were you having these conversations with any of your friends at this point or any contact back at home with family?
Yeah, I complained a lot. I think people were probably like, oh, do something else with your life. Quit complaining. And I'm like, is anyone out there else that's, you know, not content? Anyone else? So I started looking up books, too. Like, I would Google things, quarter-life crisis, you know, like, or, you know, how to figure out what you want to do with your life, or how, you know, how to find meaning in your life. Just really, like, open-ended questions that could really, you could get endless answers for that.
Yeah. I always try to give advice to students to get a job at whatever company that you want to work at, just pouring coffee. Just look around and see who looks happy. That's the job you want. And then go ask them.
Yeah.
How do I get your job?
Yeah.
And there was, I was a programmer working for a programming company, and I went there with my two friends who also shared the same major, and one of them looked at the salesperson and realized, you know what, I like consulting. So she does computer consulting. I was really drawn to the tech, so I did tech. I had another friend who said, I hate every job here. She graduated as a computer and she went to law. And it was probably the best decision for all three of us. Mm-hmm. We found exactly what we wanted at the right age before we had to go and get a job.
And hearing your story, Cassidy, that's one of the things that I think, you know, stands out to me that's so interesting and so common, in a sense, that aha moment in terms of, wait a second, I majored in this or I'm doing this, but I don't really, you know, see the career connection to it, that you had that at the point where you did an internship in your senior year. Mm-hmm. What I know is the case for me and for so many students who I've talked to is that they don't even ever do the internship. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, you graduate, you have some, you know, preconceived notion of what this major and what the career is going to be like, and then, you know, yeah, you walk across the stage, you get your diploma, you have your graduation celebration dinner, and then you're like, okay, better find a job, and you start looking, and it's a total disconnect. And,
yeah.
And here we are now at Valley College with this Guided Pathways initiative that the college is looking through and really trying to connect the dots between career and major. And that internship piece is just seems like hyper, hyper critical, that we have to figure out some sort of way to systematically build that into the pathways early, not, you know,
well, I feel like
not in second year, third year, fourth year.
We have a really big service learning program.
Right.
And really the service learning should be hooked up with the Guided Pathways. When a student comes in, they not only know what classes they're supposed to take.
Right.
And what jobs they lead to, but they also know what are the companies around here that'll take volunteers so they can see what that looks like.
Right. And even if it's like a day in the life of sort of opportunity,
yep.
Shadow for a day,
totally.
And get a sense of it. Such opportunity there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, I think, to speak to that, which is, I felt super pigeonholed. I felt like I'm a comm major. I've got all this, you know, now I've just got these like sales business experiences. How am I ever going to transition? And I want people to know you can change at any time. You're going to have to put effort into it. You got to really, you know, maybe do some volunteer opportunities or figure out ways to get experience in the field. But there's no, in my opinion, there's no point where you can't change what you're doing, especially if you don't like it. And I feel like a lot of my friends even that graduated, they have majors that don't correlate with the careers that they're in. And that's okay. If you can try to match up your major with what you ultimately end up doing, then that's ideal. But for a lot of people, they're not going to know what they want to do until they start to get experience. So it's really important to, in my opinion, think about what is the end goal? What job am I interested in? What career path am I interested in? And then work backwards from there. Okay, based off of those interests, what are some majors that might be a good fit? And then also start thinking about, you know, how can I get experience in the field, whether I'm volunteering, whether I'm just doing informational interviews with people to grow my network. I mean, hearing from people who are in the field, that's the number one thing to me, because those people know what they like about the job, what they don't like about the job, what kind of education is needed. They know that. So that's super important. And I really, I preach that because that's what helped turn me on to the field of counseling. I was connected with a career counselor at UCLA. She was a career counselor there. And she agreed to talk to me on my lunch break at one of these jobs that I was working, called her on my lunch break, started asking ask her, what do you like about it? What do you don't like? You know, what do you not like about it? Are you happy doing this? And she was like, I love my job. And I was like, what? You love your job? This is the first person that I've spoken with who said this to me. What's going on here? And she said, you know what? How about you meet me in the valley on the weekend and we'll have breakfast together and you can come and we'll chat and, you know, I'll answer all your questions. And I was just like, wow, I don't know this person. And she's willing to give me a valuable chunk of her weekend. This is amazing. So I went and I met with her and I bought her breakfast and we chatted for 3 hours. And she told me, and I just took meticulous notes. You know, she told me, this is the kind of education you need. Here are some programs I've heard of. These are the types of jobs in the field. There's a difference between community college and there's a difference between, you know, Cal States and UCs. And I really got to hear from her perspective what the field was like. And that really just kind of, I felt like here's something I can be passionate about, especially looking back at my educational history and being like, well, I had no idea how to get there. And now I could help people who are in the same situation figure out step by step what they need to do to not only get education, because that it is so powerful, you know, lifting people out of poverty, giving them additional opportunities, but also you can do something that you enjoy. And I think that that's the piece that, you know, maybe not a lot of people are aware of, is you can put all this effort into getting the education, but you also need to ask yourself these bigger questions, like, what do I want to do with my life? What makes me happy? What am I good at? And those are kind of the career counseling pieces that I feel like, unless you're taking a career counseling class or someone you know is kind of checking in with you on these things, you may not be thinking about the big picture like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So did you end up going back to school?
So I did. So I quit my job and I went back to Loyola Marymount. I got a master's degree in guidance and counseling, started working, you know, as a CGCA, career guidance counseling assistant, where I got to help other community college students and just kind of went from there. And it was interesting being a career changer, because you do have to kind of, you know, go back a couple steps. You know, now I'm a counseling assistant. You know, I was an account executive and now I no longer have a company credit card and all these things, but it's worth it because, you know, once you kind of get through the going backwards, you go way forward and to be happy. I'm so happy now doing what I'm doing. And I didn't know that was going to be possible.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big believer that if you do change careers midlife, all that experience you have, it actually matters, right?
Yeah.
So I feel accelerated also within my career path just because it wasn't a waste.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you have something you can speak about that is specific to what you're doing that other people just can't say in an interview.
Right.
Right.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The transferable skills are there no matter what job you're doing. You know, you're working at Chipotle, Starbucks. I mean, what about your teamwork abilities, your leadership abilities? There's everything that you're doing has some kind of use if you can figure out how to communicate that.
So how did you end up at Valley College then?
Okay, can I pause?
Oh, sure.
Real quick,
sure.
Just a question before that,
yeah.
About your graduate program. Because you were a communications major, is that a direct crossover to what you mastered in, or did you have to go back and take undergrad classes? And how long were you at St. Mary's for?
Okay, so I didn't. I actually communication is fine. It's a fine major to have, you know, if you're going to go into counseling. If I could go back and redo it, I would have been a psych major, though, just to be eligible to, you know, possibly teach some psychology courses, which there's no way for me to have known that. I would have redone it that way. But I didn't have to take any additional classes. My program at LMU.
LMU. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. The program at LMU, it is designed for people who work. So I was able to work and then I was able to take classes in the evening. And my program kind of counselor, she was advising students to take about 2 classes at a time, but I really wanted to power through it because I was just like, I'm ready to do this career. So I was doing 3 classes at a time because I wanted to get through it quicker.
And were you working full time at this point also?
Yeah, so I was working initially when I quit my job, I started nannying. So, you know, that was something that I just was able to do, and that was flexible, because it's really tough to find flexible jobs. I actually had asked my company, like, hey, can I stay and continue to work here during the day? My program's at night. They were like, no way, you cannot. You have to be fully devoted to this sales job or you're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So I started nannying, and then I also started picking up hours in the Los Angeles Community College District at West LA College. So I started doing that, and I think at that time you're maxed out at 25 hours. Mm-hmm. And then I was trying to pick up any other internships. So I interned at the UCLA Career Center, and then I did a little internship at Pasadena Community College. PCC.
Yeah, PCC. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was maxed out. But I knew, I was like, you know what, I've done this before. When I was in Santa Barbara, I'm working as much as I can. I'm doing school as much as I can. I'm maxing out everything. You know, I'm worn out. I'm waking up in the morning, going to work, not ending class till 10 at night. But I knew the end goal is going to be worth it. So if I can power through this right now, it's going to be worth it. And it totally was. And I wouldn't change how I did it.
Short-term sacrifice for this longer-term gain.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you get through the program, intensive program. And then to back to your question, John, what brought you ultimately here to Valley?
So I was done with school, but my degree didn't confer until about 6 months after I was done, mm-hmm. which was really tough because you can't work in the community college district until your degree confers. So it was just kind of like, well, what am I going to do now? UCs would take you. Cal States would take you, I believe, without the degree conferring. But I was like, you know what? I don't want to give in and do something I don't want to do just to have a job. I'm going to hold out as long as I can, and I'm going to wait until I can get the job that I want. Hmm. And people around me were like, that's dumb. What are you doing? Go get a job. And I'm like, no, I have to hold out for the thing that I want. Because if I give in now, I'm just going to do the same thing I did before. I'm just going to go into something that I'm not super passionate about. I'm going to wait, and I'm going to find the right opportunity, and I'm going to go for it. So it was a while before I got a job. I was actually like almost ran out of money. I was just living on the edge. I probably could have gotten by for like one or two more months. And I got a call from Valley College, and they're like, okay, you're going to get an interview for this position, the STEM counseling position. And I just couldn't believe it. It was one of those moments where I felt like kind of similar to the call that I got at UCLA. Like, I feel like I won the lottery. Like, this is the best day ever. I got an interview. I never expected that I would get an interview. I was just so happy. And I said, you know what? I probably won't get the position. There's no way that they're going to hire me for this, but, if I just get an interview, that'll be good enough because I'll at least start to get practice interviewing. So I went in for the interview and I got a call. I got a second interview. What? That's crazy. I just, you know, you have imposter syndrome when you, maybe not everyone does, but I definitely did.
I totally believe, like, I don't believe belong here.
Yeah, I very much felt like that. Like, oh, this is a fluke. Something's wrong. You know, there's no way that they could hire me for this position. And second interview, I walked out. I was like, I bombed that. There's no way they're gonna hire me for this because I choked. The first question that I got asked, I didn't know how to answer it. And that set the tone, I thought, for the rest of the interview. But then I remember I got the call that I was offered the position. And I honestly do feel like I won the lottery. I just was so ecstatic that I was offered this position. And every day I drive here and I don't hate it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm happy to go to work. I don't feel like it's a pill or a chore. And that's just huge for me, especially because I was so anxious driving to my old jobs. Mm-hmm. And I would just wait for my lunch breaks when I could leave and go listen to a podcast, you know, about how to improve your life. And I was reading these self-help books every day at lunch. And I would, you know, just dread having to go back into the office. And now I don't feel that way at all. And I think that it's really important that I had those experiences because now I can relate so much more to the people who are feeling like, I don't know what I want to do, or look, I have all this experience in this area and I don't even like it. Now what am I going to do? I'm stuck. And I'm like, okay, I get it. And there's ways that you can get out of that, but it's going to take some effort. And if you're willing to put in the effort, you can make it happen.
So what are your responsibilities here now?
So STEM counseling and advising coordinating. So I'm a STEM counselor and advising coordinator.
Well, first of all, what's STEM?
Yeah, good question. Science, technology, engineering, and math. So that's kind of the umbrella for a lot of different majors that go underneath it in those areas. And we have a program here. It's Promoting Awareness of STEM Opportunities, PASO program. So that's a grant funded by the Department of Education, which basically allows us to put on all these different programs, like the STEM speaker series, where we get professionals to come share their experience. What else do we do? The mentoring and advising program here, where first-year students get connected to a mentor in their field. So if you're an engineering major, we try to pair you with an engineering major that's been here a little bit longer than you, who, you know, has good grades and kind of knows how to be a successful student. And then you also get access as a student in the program to our faculty advisors. And the faculty, John's a faculty advisor for our mathematics department. And so John is able to meet with students. And you want to share a little bit about that?
Sure. So I guess, I mean, this kind of fulfills sort of all these desires that you had in your life that we talked about, where as a student, you get to talk to professionals in your field. You get to question people who are managers, supervisors in their field in areas of science, also nursing, right?
Yep, nursing too.
Medicine, science, mm-hmm. technology, engineering. And you get to have a peer student work with you. I just had one of my students was flunking my class, and her peer mentor came up to me and said, "How's your class set up?" And I explained how my class is set up, and she went back and explained to her, "This is all you got to do. Just study this, this, and this, and you'll be fine." And the student started getting A's.
Yeah.
And she just needed someone to just ask that question for her. What do I need to do to get an A? And then now the student comes up to me and realizes that it's not that scary. And just having someone take that first step that you may not know was available to you, mm-hmm. that's very important. So for me as the faculty advisor, I have a PhD in computer science and math, so I can talk to students about who are interested in anything technical. So I've had a few students who are interested in AI, and they just don't know, how do I know what's an AI? So, you know, we went down, we looked up who are the major people in AI, what are the conferences, what's a cheap way to get there so they can volunteer to help at the conference, mm-hmm. and actually see all the latest sort of papers that are on AI. We found a mentor site where they can sign up and get 20 minutes with someone who is an AI practitioner in the field. And they can just sign up for that and get 20 minutes and trade email back and forth. So my job is just sort of to just hang out, and if someone has a random question, just to help walk them through, like, this is how you would explore that field.
Yeah, that's exactly promoting awareness of STEM opportunities. So that's what the faculty advisors are there for, and the mentors. And it creates this really cool office environment, too, where we have students helping students and, you know, looking into ways to not just kind of get by, but really excel. And I think that that's the culture in the STEM office, is students are there to figure out what are all the things that they can take advantage of on the campus, and really start thinking about their careers and things like that. So the program is really great. And then I'm also the counselor for the program, so I get to meet with students to help them figure out, you know, which classes they need to take for their major, and talk about what they want to do for their careers. So it's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it sounds like, and I know just from being over there in that area, it's such a hub of activity over there.
Yeah.
How, as we kind of bring this to a close here, I think, how do people find you? So where's the location? Are you doing anything on social media? People want to find out more about the program or connect with you, Cassidy. What's the best way to do it?
So we're located in Campus Center, Room 101. That's the STEM office. And it's right across from Monarch Hall. So if you can make it to Monarch Hall, you just go right across the hallway and walk in and, you know, just come check it out. You don't have to be part of the mentoring program to come in and see what we're doing. But another thing is, I post a lot of different information, opportunities, scholarship, internship information on our social media, primarily on our Twitter account, which is LAVC_STEM, STEM. And then it's the same handle for Instagram. So yeah, definitely. And to make an appointment with me for counseling, we actually have a STEM website as well. So I just tell people Google LAVC STEM, it'll take you there. And on the left-hand side, book a STEM counseling appointment, and people can do that there.
Thank you so much for sitting down, sharing with us your story, all the kind of twists and turns that brought you where you're at today, where you're in this position of being able to help so many students.
Yeah,
really
thank
appreciate
you.
Your time.
Definitely. Thanks,
thank
guys.
You.